From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Most of the great society legislation that President Johnson passed is really stuff that let us implement, or at least try to implement, all of the great goals that people talked about at the founding of this country, people talked about during the Civil War. Every time I walk through the LBJ Library, I'm still humbled to think that he could pass so many significant pieces of legislation. And I might add, not just the traditional civil rights legislation that you think about. Everything from PBS, first federal funding into higher ed, so many health care initiatives that he's responsible for, and I'm just so proud to be a beneficiary of that program.
Senator Rodney Ellis, Texas State Senator from the 13th State Senate District and Chairman of the Senate Committee on Open Government. This past April, the LBJ Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin hosted a Civil Rights Summit to mark the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The summit featured three former presidents and President Obama. It also looked back at the Civil Rights Movement of the 1960s and looked forward to the Civil Rights issues still facing America and the world. The summit was entitled, We Shall Overcome. President Johnson began his quest for a more just and honorable America with the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the most transformational civil rights legislation since Reconstruction, and a critical step in the realization of America's promise. In the years that followed, LBJ passed the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Together, these three laws banned discrimination based on race, color, sex, religion, or national origin. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, the Civil Rights Summit to mark the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 with Texas State Senator Rodney Ellis and Grammy Award-winning singer Mavis Staples in Black America.
We happened to be in Montgomery, Alabama on a Sunday morning, and we didn't have to work until that night. So Pops called my sisters and I to his room. He said, listen, y'all, this man Martin is here. Martin Luther King. We didn't know Dr. King, Pops. He keeps secrets, you know. And he said, Martin Luther King, and he has a church here. And I'd like to go to his Sunday morning service. Would you all would like to go? We said, oh yeah, Dad, we want to go. We all got in the car, went down to Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. We were seated. Someone let Dr. King know that we were in the service, and he acknowledged us. He said, we're glad to have Pop Staples and his daughters here this morning. And I hope you enjoy the service. Well, we enjoyed the service. Yes. When it was over, you know, Dr. King would stand at the door and greet the worshipers as they filed out. My sisters and I, we walked past and shook Dr. King's hand. And when Pops' turn came along, he stood there and talked to him for a while.
The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was a revolutionary piece of legislation in this country that effectively outlawed egregious forms of discrimination against African Americans and women, including all forms of segregation. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 terminated unequal application in regard to voter registration requirements and all forms of racial segregation in schools, in the workplace, and by facilities that offered services to the general public. On July 2, 1964, President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed into law the Historic Civil Rights Act. This past April, for 3 days, the LBJ Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin hosted a Civil Rights Summit to mark the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The summit was entitled, We Shall Overcome. Three of the five living ex-presidents appeared at the library for the Civil Rights Summit to pay tribute to Johnson, as well as former professional athletes, veterans of the movement, and politicos. On today's edition of In Black America, we highlight Grammy Award-winning singer and civil rights activist Mavis Staples and Texas State Senator Rodney Ellis.
I am clearly a beneficiary of the Great Society programs. I hope I don't look it, but I was born in 1954, April of 1954. About a month later, the Brown versus the Board of Education decision came down. Most of the great society legislation that President Johnson passed is really stuff that let us implement, or at least try to implement, all of the great goals that people talked about at the founding of this country, people talked about during the Civil War. Every time I walk through the LBJ Library, I'm still humbled to think that he could pass so many significant pieces of legislation. And I might add, not just the traditional civil rights legislation that you think about. Everything from PBS, first federal funding into higher ed, so many health care initiatives that he's responsible for, and I'm just so proud to be a beneficiary of that program. I did go to the LBJ school, started in 1975, graduated in 1977, started working around the state capitol. The Houston City Council, prior to the Voting Rights Act, elected five people at large to be on the governing board of that city, four council members who elected citywide and the mayor. It changed because of the Voting Rights Act, and in 1979, they went to a 9-5-1 plan, nine districts, five at large, and the mayor. I ended up being in that second wave of people who would win one of those district council seats at a very early age in 1983. Most of what I've been able to do in my life has clearly been as a result of the Great Society legislation. First real job I had, other than working as a yard boy for my dad, who was a yard man in Houston, was through the mayor's Inner City Leadership Development Program. You'd know that as a Model Cities Youth Program. And they were training me to be x-ray technician. Now, I'm sure back with my ego, even then, I thought I wanted to own an x-ray company, but it was so meaningful for me. Someone who was not, according to the standards of the time, would end up having three college degrees. I didn't opt to go and become an x-ray technician, but it was the first job I had, other than wearing jeans and the outfit that I'd wear, to go and do yards with my dad. And it really gave me a sense of how important math was, how important science was, and I'd like to think it's what led me to join, of all things, the slide routine, for those of you who are old enough to remember those. And it led me here to Austin, Texas, to win second place with my Texas speed rule. If you're smart enough to remember, it had a sliding K scale. So it meant that I could do the cube roots. Even now, when I'm calculating numbers in my head, it's a direct result of having had that job as an x-ray technician and having to know numbers and be able to calculate them in my head. So I'm a big fan of President Johnson's. I've listened to most of the tapes. I would read those red boxes, the papers in those red boxes upstairs when I was here at the LBJ school studying. I'll close by sharing this with you, and sometime you should go and do it. One of my favorite passages to read was when President Johnson was trying to decide who he would appoint to be the Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And I clearly remember being a graduate student here in 1976, maybe, reading where Adam Clayton Powell, who was one of my heroes, Congressman Powell, did not want Secretary Weaver to get that appointment. So he wrote a pretty harsh letter to President Johnson saying anybody but Weaver should be the Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. But it was a great experience to go to school here, and I'm so glad that all of the presidents, living presidents who were able to come, are going to be here to pay homage to this great man. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
You were 10 years old when the Civil Rights Bill were passed. What was life like growing up in Houston?
I grew up in the southeast side of Houston, a neighborhood called Sunnyside, being a son of a yard man and a maid. Let me tell you, in that house with a lot of love, two great parents. My dad had a sixth grade education because the so-called colored middle school was just so far away, he waited until he looked old enough to join the Army at about 16 years old and left. My mother graduated from high school in Houston. They got married when she was looking at going to college. Instead, they got married. There's no way I would be where I am today. There's no way I could have gotten out of the lifestyle we had, which had a lot of love, as I said. But, you know, to go from a house with two bedrooms, one bathroom, and five kids, to the opportunity that I'm able to give my children to have gotten three college degrees, it is clearly a direct result of the civil rights legislation that passed and was signed by President Johnson. It was a hard fight to get that legislation passed, and President Johnson was clearly the leader of it, but he had a lot of help. He had Martin Luther King. A lot of people died. A lot of people cried. A lot of people prayed for us to get to where we are. And I think what comes out of this week more than anything else, having so many presidents come to the OBJ library and pay homage to this great man and his leadership in terms of civil rights, it's also paying homage to others who fought that battle and helped make it possible. And also is to pay homage to the fact that we still have a lot of work to do. In the education space, Johnson was the first president to put federal money in higher education, the Head Start program, really to try to improve the fabric of life for so many people in this country. Take people like me and bring me out of poverty and really give me an opportunity to be a middle-class American and to be a leader in my community. That's really what King's vision was all about. That's what LBJ's legacy is all about. And this is a great week for us to reflect on how far we have come and how far we still have to go.
I asked you earlier about the city of Houston, and unless you're a history buff, a lot of people don't know about the political astuteness that people from Houston had back in the day.
Well, you know, it is interesting that when Martin Luther King went to Houston for one of his last appearances there at the height of his career, very few people showed up at the Coliseum to hear his speech. Aretha Franklin was there. I think Harry Belafonte was there. Reverend Bill Lawson, local civil rights leader who Dr. King asked to go national, but he declined to go national. He was there. But the business community in Houston got together and they decided, look, it's coming. And we're one of the last major cities in the country not to have a riot. And before this place blows up, why don't we just figure out how to get it done? And they did, and that's a good thing. In a lot of ways, the vestiges of that old attitude, we'll do it ourselves, has created opportunities and challenges as well in Houston. But let me tell you, right now, Houston's one of the most attractive cities in the country for people of color to go to, African Americans as well as Hispanics.
One more question, Senator Ellis. What was it about LBJ that gave him the impetus and the courage, considering being a Southern good old boy senator, to come up with this language for a civil rights bill that moved the country forward?
I think the fact that he was a school teacher early on in life, I think the fact that he grew up poor and then ended up being a middle-class person, I think he really saw what discrimination did in the eyes of those young kids that he taught in Cotulla, Texas, and it impacted him. I think he generally appreciated the leadership and the issues that were advanced by civil rights leaders of his day. And I think he was quite honestly moved to use his legislative skill to help people of color, just as he had used his legislative skill to help working class people in his district.
Texas State Senator Rodney Ellis. Singers who can lay claim to being the voice of America's conscience, and even fewer who continue to make important music. Mavis Staples is one of the most notable singers of our time. She was never a stranger to the civil rights movement. Since leading her family's gospel group, the Staples Singers, during the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s, Mavis has continued the legacy of civil rights music into this century. In 2010, at age 73, she won the first Grammy of her career for We Are Not Alone. Mavis is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award winner, a National Heritage Fellowship Award recipient, and was listed on one of Rolling Stone's top 100 singers of all time. During the Music and Social Consciousness panel, Mavis spoke with Bob Santilli, Executive Director of the Grammy Museum.
Back in, we started singing in 1950. And 1960, well, Pops had started hearing Dr. King on the radio. Dr. King had a radio program. And Pops was hearing his program. We happened to be in Montgomery, Alabama on a Sunday morning. And we didn't have to work until that night. So Pops called my sisters and I to his room. He said, listen, y'all, this man Martin is here. Martin Luther King. We didn't know Dr. King, Pops. He keeps secrets, you know. And he said, Martin Luther King, and he has a church here. And I'd like to go to his Sunday morning service. Would you all would like to go? We said, oh yeah, Dad, we want to go. We all got in the car, went down to Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. We were seated. Someone let Dr. King know that we were in the service, and he acknowledged us. He said, we're glad to have Pop Staples and his daughters here this morning. And I hope you enjoy the service. Well, we enjoyed the service. Yes. When it was over, you know, Dr. King would stand at the door and greet the worshipers as they filed out. My sisters and I, we walked past and shook Dr. King's hand. And when Pops' turn came along, he stood there and talked to him for a while. And he finally came on. We get back to the hotel. He let us go to our room, and he went to his room. Then about a half hour later, Pops called us to his room again. He said, listen, you all, I like this man's message. I really like his message. And I think that if he can preach it, we can sing it. Yes, and that was the beginning of our writing of civil rights songs, freedom songs, message songs. And the first one was March Up Freedom's Highway. And then we wrote Why Am I Treated So Bad? Why Am I Treated So Bad turned out to be Dr. King's favorite. And he would tell Pops, you know, we'd sing before Dr. King would speak. And some nights at the, we'd be going down, all the men are down on the parking lot, Pops, Dr. King would yell out, you gonna sing my song tonight, right, Stape? He called Pops Stape. And Pops said, oh yeah, doctor, we gonna sing your song. And that was Why Am I Treated So Bad? We'd sing Why Am I Treated So Bad? Pops wrote that song. You know, there were a time when the 9 black children were trying to board a school bus in Little Rock, Arkansas. They wanted to attend Central High School. This went on for so long, Bob, they wouldn't let these children would walk proudly with their books ahead, held high, and they'd walk into a mob that would spit at them and throw at them and call them names. They never would turn their heads. They'd keep on walking. And finally, it's went on for so long, the governor of Arkansas, the mayor of Little Rock, and the president of the United States said, let those children go to school. And we're all on the floor, Pops in his recliner. We wanted to see these children board that bus. Man, children get up to the bus. Time they get to the door, a policeman put his billy club across the door. And that's when Pop said, why are they doing that? Why are you treating them so bad? And he wrote that song that evening.
Yeah. It's pretty obvious, and I think most historians acknowledge the fact that music really was the fuel of the civil rights movement. If you took away music, it would have been hard to succeed because music gave the marchers, people like yourself, Dr. King, the courage, the courage and the strength to push on despite the obstacles and the hardships.
That's right.
You grew up in the church, you grew up learning gospel music, and it was pretty easy for gospel music to leave the church and get out on the front lines and get out on to the marching, right?
Yes, indeed.
Explain how that happened.
Well, that was, we in the church, we're singing gospel. Gospel is truth. And this civil rights movement was truth. We needed to give our input of what we felt. You know, we're Christian people, and we mean business. You know, we want it like this. We don't mess around, y'all. So once we started singing, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Turn me around, you know, and you put some of that gospel up in them songs, and people are going to hear that. People are going to hear music, period. Yeah. You know, people love music. I don't care what kind of music it is, but if you sing it, yes, sir. If you sing, if you bring in some truth and realness, I mean, and you people can actually see this happening, what you're singing about. It's gonna move you. It's gonna move, it's gonna motivate you. And that was what we wanted to give people a reason to get up in the morning and get started. You know, get started on your day. And Pops was our leader. Whatever Pops told us we wanted to do, that's what we were gonna do. You know, and we loved it anyhow. I was a teenager. I was the same age as those kids in Little Rock that couldn't board the bus. You know, so I became super interested in the civil rights movement. When we first started, you know, when we went to Dr. King's church, I didn't know Dr. King. Yeah. But I certainly enjoyed that service, and I'll never forget it. And I've just been trying to keep it going, keep it going. Every song, every album, CD that I record, I have some civil rights songs there, freedom song. Every concert that I do today, I'm still singing freedom songs. I'm still singing. I'm not going to let it go because I'm a witness. I'm a living witness, you know? Yeah. Yes, indeed. Thank you. But it's just a part of me. And I think the more, you know, I continue to sing these songs, this generation, the next, these kids, you know, they weren't there when I was there, and I'm still here, and I'm bringing it to you. I'm still on the battlefield, y'all. I'm on the battlefield, and I'm fighting every day, but I'm fighting for love, I'm fighting for hope, and I'm fighting for peace. And I won't stop. I will not stop. My father and Dr. King, your greatest, like you hear, what's his name? Muhammad Ali. I'm the greatest of all time. Dr. King, I'm sorry, Ali. I'm sorry. Nah, you can't be Dr. King, Dr. Martin Luther King. And you know, I just loved to hear Dr. King's laughter. Yeah. You know, he had this jovial laughter. And most times I would look at him, he looked so serious. And he might look sad, but that's what I've held on to, his laughter. Because anytime I heard him, I said, oh, Dr. King is happy. Yeah. Dr. King is happy. But it's just such an honor and such a wonderful feeling to have been able to stand next to this man and to shake his hand, this great, great man, Dr. Martin Luther King.
We were talking just backstage, and I asked you if you and the Staple Singers were at the March on Washington, of course, and that was one of the ones that you missed. Where were you and what was happening?
We were over there in London. Had no business over there. We missed the march on Washington, but that was up. We recorded. We wrote songs. March. It's a long walk to D.C., but I got my walking shoes on, and we would sing.
You were there in spirit then.
I was there in spirit, But them folk in London didn't have nothing for me, you know. They didn't even have no turnip and mustard green. So, and I know over there that March, them sisters put the pots on. Yeah. They put them pots on, and after everybody got through marching, they went to munching. Cornbread, turnip and mustard greens, okra, the works, corn on the cob. Well, I'm getting hungry. Bob, you do this to me every time. Yes, indeed. But I'm just so grateful that the Lord has kept me, and I'm still here to carry on what Dr. King and my father, Pop Staples, my sister Yvonne is still with me. You know, we're carrying on. We got to keep that legacy of Pop Staples and Dr. Martin Luther King alive. But Dr. King is gonna be alive, but Pops, we have to work on Pops' legacy.
That's right, we do.
Know, everybody know them Staples singers.
That's right. Show your love.
Each and every day, march for freedom's highway. March each and every day. Made up my mind, and I won't turn around.
Made up my mind,
and I won't turn around. There's this one thing.
Grammy Award-winning singer and civil rights activist Mavis Staples. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.